What's up, Knoll Nation? I am Jesse from Plant the Spear here with Michael Hinton, and we are going to do a little bit of a different episode this week. We're going to do something. Now, I don't know if you'll be watching this on Friday or not, but we're going to call this one a little bit of Free Talk Friday, just where we can say whatever we want, talk about a little bit outside of the realm of Florida State while tying it back into FSU. Obviously, that's what our main focus is here. But just a chance to kind of sit back and like we're at a game outside of Duke Campbell Stadium at the tailgate, just talking about whatever comes to mind. So, Michael, how are you this morning, my man? It's great to be here with you.
I'm good, Jesse. Thanks for having me on again, as always. And, man, I'm geeked out, man. I'm ready for some more Noles football, ready for them to – man, I'm excited about what the rest of the season could be. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited. And like we said, depending on when you guys watch this, we are right on the verge of a big ranked matchup against Duke in Doak Campbell Stadium. This is going to be a tone setter for the season. I mean, this is going to be one of your biggest tests that you've had so far outside of LSU and Clemson. So I'm excited to see how they do it. I do think Duke is a good team.
Yeah.
But I think Florida State should get a big win here. And we're going to talk kind of the mid-season vibe check for Florida State, kind of see how we're feeling about things now that we're halfway through. We may be a little bit past halfway through by the time you watch this. Then we're going to talk about the ACC picture because, you know, it's pretty interesting. There's a lot of teams that are still in the picture that we may not think of. And then we're going to talk about things kind of more on the national stage. So diving right into it, let's first talk about Florida State and kind of the mid-season vibe check here. How are we feeling about Florida State? We'll start with just kind of some overall thoughts, how we think things are going, and then we'll go a little bit of offense, defense, and things like that. So, Michael, obviously when you talk about Florida State in 2023, you know, I will say before we get into this, a lot of people tend to go, well, how can you be negative when they're 6-0? It doesn't mean you're being negative because they're 6-0. You can still, like, if you have a kid, and I know you have children and I don't, but, like, if you're watching your kid play baseball and he may be the best player on the team, but you realize he's not living up to his potential, it's fair to say that. So, like, we're not here to dump on Florida State.
Yes, correct.
We're a very positive show. We're just – there's some things that may not be great and some that may. So we're going to talk about it all. It's not trying to dump on this team, but – I think overall, when you talk about 2023, you're 6-0, you're undefeated in conference play, you're top five in the country, you're all your goals are in front of you to win an ACC championship, to make the playoffs. It maybe hasn't looked as electrifying as we thought, but Florida State started to pick up steam the last 2 weeks. I just feel really good through the first six games. Michael, just kind of give me some of your thoughts on the overall season so far and how you feel like it's going.
Well, like, here's the thing I think, Jesse, is like, you remember, like, in the preseason, Florida State fans, we were all talking about, like, if we could just go, if we could just be, you know, what is it, 3-1, right? If we if we could be 3-1 at the bye, man, that would feel so good, right? Because that means that we either beat LSU or we beat Clemson. Well, we came through the bye 4-0 now,
right?
Be it that, you know, that Clemson game all gave us a heart attack, but still, we were 4-0, right? And then the other side of this, think about this. When we ended the season, we ended 2022 with what was it? Six straight wins, five straight wins. What was that?
Yeah, it was, I think it was six straight wins.
Yeah, six straight wins. Okay. And the thing, everybody was upset. Well, everybody was euphoric of we were dominating, but then we were upset at the last, because the Florida game and the Oklahoma game,
right?
The defense was absolutely hot garbage, right?
Right.
Well, has any team outside of the just the weirdness of Boston College looked as good as those teams did last season?
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point, because when you talk about who Florida State's played so far this year, I think now that you've had six games to look back at things, I do think the LSU win spoiled us a little bit. I think it was like, okay, we mowed over LSU, who's still a very good team. They've only lost to Ole Miss, who's still a good team. But the way you blew them out, I think people thought every game was going to look like that. Now, Southern Miss has turned into hot garbage. They are so bad this year.
They're terrible.
But that's not a game that you're going to judge your season on anyway. We know the Boston College was – it still happened, but it was kind of a fluky thing with the flu and just the environment and things like that. But then they got back on track.
Yep.
You know, they beat Clemson in Death Valley, who is – hit or miss. I mean, they had a really close game against Wake Forest at home, and then Virginia Tech blew out Wake Forest. We'll talk about some of that in the ACC picture. But overall, like you said, I think you made it to 6-0. You didn't lose one of the two games that you were worried the most about, and every game looks winnable. And, you know, when you talk about that Oklahoma game, I understand that they were down some players. It's not the same team that it is this year, but Turns out that Oklahoma team's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And so that's my point. It's like, yeah, at the end of the season, we were euphoric that we won 10 games for the first time in a long time. But then we're also upset because we're like, man, how's this defense not gotten any better, right? But you look, you come into this year, and you're right. We were spoiled by the second half of LSU. I mean, we took them off the map. They didn't score. But yet, if you think about it, no other team has been able to hold that offense under 24 points like we have, right? Even though they lost to Ole Miss, they put up a bazillion points. I can't remember what it was, but it was well over 1,000 combined yards of offense in that game. No other team's been able to hold them down. I mean, we shut down, you know, we held Clemson, if you think about it, you know, in the second half, outside that third, that beginning of third quarter, Clemson didn't score. Now, Clemson's off as a suspect, but we scored, you know, over 30 points on that really good defense, right? No other team has been able to put up more than 28 points on that Clemson defense, and we scored 31. So what does that tell you?
And, I think that's why I'm so interested in this Duke game. And like I said, you may be watching this after the Duke game has already been played, but they have, the most they've given up is 21 points. Now, we know they haven't played any lights out offenses yet. Right. And Florida State is lights out at times. They're not always lights out. So we'll see. Right. But if Florida State, you know, they've scored 30 plus points in 12 games so far. It's a streak that they're still on. And if they are able to score over 30 points against a Duke defense that's really good, then I think you feel good about seeing that another performance against a quality defense. Yep. And, you know, you bring up a good point. I actually saved these this morning to shout out on the show. So Pick Six Previews on Twitter does a really great job. Very accurate page, puts out a lot of things. But so we put out the top offenses and defenses in Power 5, opponent adjusted per play. And LSU has the number two offense in the country behind Washington. And you held them to basically 17 points. I mean, the last seven that they got was in garbage time after you'd already pulled the starters. So, yeah, man, I mean, you really did well. Florida State does sit at number 11 on that list. So, again, I think you've seen some really good things from this defense this year. And really now, especially in the last 2 weeks, when you talk about what they did against Virginia Tech, who, you know, Virginia Tech at first looks terrible. Right. But now they're kind of finding themselves. Like, I think the worst thing for Virginia Tech was catching Florida State when they did. They had that big win at night versus Pitt.
Right.
And then they got kind of run over by Florida State. And it was like, okay, well, how can they keep their momentum going? Maybe they wanted that loss beforehand. But, you know, now that team's getting a little better. Florida State did a good job there. And then Syracuse, who's not a dominant offense, but at the same time, like, they're not terrible either. They currently come in the Power Five. I'm trying to find them real quick. But still, I mean, it's not like, even if it's not a great offense, you shut them down. I mean, you didn't let them do anything. So they're at 49. So that's a top 50 offense in the Power Five, and you basically allowed nothing. So I actually feel like, talking about preseason expectations to now, I thought it was going to be the offense. And granted, they've scored 30-plus points in every game. And if they do that the rest of the season, it's probably enough to win every game. I think the defense has really been the story these last few weeks, and it looks like who you can rely on this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the defense has been probably, outside of, you know, Keon, I think the defense has been the biggest story of the season. Like, yes, there were some early season bust in certain plays. There was some misalignment, some communication issues, especially when Akeem Dent was out for those few games, probably, which was a big part of, you know, the whole Boston College deal too, again.
Right.
But when if you take out those things, they've literally shut down the number two offense in the nation, an SEC number two offense in the nation, right? They have, for the most part, controlled these dynamic, wide, you know, QB running offenses. I mean, we've let QBs run all over us, but we've not allowed it to cost us the game yet.
Right.
And so you have confidence going into every game. I mean, if you think about this, outside of maybe playing potentially North Carolina in the ACC championship, there is no other offense that gives me scare on the rest of the schedule. None. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So you would trust your defense against all those offenses, including this Duke game, depending on when you're watching this. And so now you're just wondering, okay, can the offense live up to its potential? Because if the defense continues to do what it does, and the offense can hit that next gear, I mean, then you start thinking there's not a team in the nation that scares you.
Yeah, and I think really the other big thing when you talk about Florida State is, like, if we put this Florida State team back in 2021, you might say, all right, well, I mean, we're doing pretty good against the schedule, but you still have Georgia out there waiting.
Correct.
But when you look at some things like, okay, Washington's offense, maybe that gives you some problems there. But, I mean, you're talking about an offense that's not too much different than LSU. You're talking about number one and number two, and you were successful there.
Correct.
So there's just really no juggernaut out there. I mean, really, and this is something we're going to talk about in the national picture, but I'm super interested to see what Georgia does without Brock Bowers the next few weeks. Yes. Their schedule looks a little bit tougher with Ole Miss and Florida and Tennessee on there as well. And then, you know, how good is Michigan once people stop them from cheating? So we'll see, you know, we'll see how that goes, you know?
That's right.
And like, I will say on that situation, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And so like, I don't blame them for doing what they're doing. At the same time, like, I think everybody cheats to a degree, but like when you say, does it make that big of a difference? It does. And all you have to do is think back to the 2014 BCS National Championship game with Florida State.
Oh, man.
I mean, they almost doubled their yards per play once they figured out that they were stealing signals and they started putting up towels. So that could be interesting too, because their hardest schedule is in front of them with Ohio State and whatnot. So if they're not, you know, if they're not being the Houston Astros of college football, then like, can they win those games? That's going to be interesting.
Well, like, I mean, like you said, man, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? And I'm not advocating. We're not on this. We're not here advocating for cheating. But
I wish we'd have cheated more from 2018 to 2021. Like,
I would have took all the cheating in the world. I would have
cheat more. Like, just win.
But no, anyway. For sure. No, but for sure. But, like, I mean, the thing is, this is a 30-year-old rule, okay?
Yep.
This whole, like, you can't go to scout your opponents at their game. That's a 30-year-old rule that the NCAA instituted because they said, you know, basically you can get as much information from tape and TV copy than you, as you could get in person. You know, the coaches 30 years ago argued that, well, but you can't know the speed and all of that stuff, right? So 30-year-old rule, 30 years, no one's paying attention to it. So if Michigan and Jim Harbaugh are like, I mean, you know, because let's be real, right? You could literally show up in just a plain shirt. No one knows who the assistant coaches are or the off the field analyst. You show up in a plain shirt. You're just writing down whatever. And then you do it. Like, who's to say that hasn't already been happening? And somehow Michigan is the one that get caught. Like,
I know. And I guarantee you it is happening because that was an analyst for Michigan that was doing it. And, you know, if you have 80,000 people in a stadium, who's to say there's not one guy standing there watching the sideline? It is what it is.
Exactly.
And I just still think that the silliest thing in college football right now is, why don't we have the headsets and the helmets? I mean, if you cut it off after a certain like 15 seconds, 10 seconds,
like doing the like NFL, that,
right? There's no advantage. It's 2023, guys. I mean there's no reason we don't have that. There's no reason we don't have a chip in the football. Like, there's no reason for these things.
Oh yeah, why are we still using chains to measure first down? Like, this is ridiculous.
I just don't get it.
I saw something the other day. I was watching the replay of the Duke game. You know, for the school of the deaf. They play, you know, college football. They're putting these little like visual chips inside the helmet and they can see the play call.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. So the coach push a button on the iPad and it says like three wide angle left, you know, whatever
that's
the play
awesome.
Is. And they can see it. So now they're not worried about actually trying to hear the play call and have to do like signals and stuff. I'm like, come on, man. If the deaf school has the technology, what's going on here?
Yeah, why don't we have that in Power 5? And I mean, the thing is, like, you can still have crowd noise be a factor that you can barely hear the play call and things like that. So it's still fun in college football. I just think it's silly how dated the structure of the game is. Like, it definitely needs to be updated. They need to have, you know, like I said, it doesn't need to be. I mean, how many times do you see the refs where it's like the ball's here and then they spot it and they go, oh, it's right here.
Yeah.
And then like that's like they move it which direction they need to be, and it's just crazy. So I think
ridiculous.
That's
ridiculous.
It's something that should be, you know, done about. But, you know, talking back about the midseason vibes of Florida State, I just think, like I said, when you talk about the full picture down the road, obviously you play the games on your schedule first, and then you figure out that, you know, there's no point in crossing a bridge till you get there, but it's okay to kind of look ahead. But I do think that now when you talk about Florida State, one of the things that is, we've talked about this before, that's the equally most frustrating and most exciting thing is you haven't played a lot of your best football yet. Now, we've seen glimpses of what they can be. That's something that we saw last week with the frustrations of Jordan Travis in that game, where there was some miscues and things like that. And there was visible frustration. And I think a lot of that is because when you talk about a guy like Jordan, when you talk about Norvell and these guys who are veterans, they know the potential of this team. They know what they can accomplish, and they want to put the best product out there because they don't want to miss an opportunity to have a really special season. And I believe they will anyway, over some piddly stuff that they could get worked out. And I think that's frustrating, but it's exciting when you talk about Florida State could get better, and they look like they can compete with any team in the country right now.
Right. Well, like, and I think for us fans, the issue for us is like, we want to see the finished product now so that we feel confident going into every game that we're just going to dominate. Right. And like, when you look at Georgia 2 years ago, like literally one of the most dominant teams in college football. You look at Florida State 2013, Well, I think Alabama 2009, 2010. You look at like those three teams, and you just knew from the moment they got off the bus, somebody was getting a butt whooping, And so we've been conditioned as fans to, okay, that's what will make us feel better. That's what will be dominant. But Mike Norvell has said from day one, and this is what I really appreciate about Mike, is like he has said he has not veered from his message, is that we want our team playing the best football in November. So for us, it's like, oh, we want that now, but they're building something, right? The climb. Right. They're climbing towards something. At the same time, I also think it's fair for us as fans to say, okay, you're climbing. We're climbing with you, and we're going to critique what the things that should not be a problem at this stage of the climb is still a problem.
Right. And I agree. And when you look at some of the games now, I will say that some of the score outcomes could be different depending on some officiating issues. It is what it is. You know, it's frustrating to watch, but like, you know, you talk about the Virginia Tech game, probably should have been about 46 to 10, things like that. So there's a lot of things. A Syracuse game probably should have maybe even been a shutout or whatever with some of the penalties. So that has affected the outcome, but it's when you do watch it, they have like some dry spells and quarters and games where it just doesn't look great. And I think a lot of it's just, you've been the better team, and you, you know, how is that going to play out when you play in Ohio State, when you play in Michigan or Georgia in the playoffs? But you're hoping that they have those things fixed by the time they get there.
Right.
And again, like you said, it's better to peak at that time. I mean, when you talk about just some of the last few weeks, you have seen them get more dominant. You have seen them work on some things. I think they're also getting some more guys involved throughout the season. Like we saw some miscues in Syracuse. I don't think that it wasn't like, Keon and Jordan were missing each other. It was some of the newer receivers who just got in. So you can tell that they're getting better at some things, but some of the guys just haven't got a lot of playing time. And I think that's something that will sort itself out going forward. You know, maybe after the Duke game, I don't think you get too deep in the depth chart on this one. But again, I think that, like you said, it's all
hopefully
about
you will, because you're blowing them out.
I hope so. I do hope so. I think it's just, like you said, you're trying to peak at the right time. And I do think that this is a team that has all the tools there. They just, you know, they got to figure some things out. But now that they've gotten through really the meat part of their schedule, you have some chances to work on some things. And that's where, like last year, outside of the LSU game, it really didn't start with the hardest schedule. You kind of got to ramp up before you got those three games, and you lost all three of them.
You lost all three.
You're obviously in a better position than you are now. And I think Florida State's going to be fine. But, you know, when we talk about, and we'll talk a little bit about the offense and then the defense before we get into some other topics here. But when you talk about the offense, I think so far, we just talked about it, they've had some dry spells, but overall, they've looked great. And I think the thing is, when I say that they look great, is their production.
Yep.
They are still putting points on the board. Like we said, when you talk about the opponent adjusted per play offenses, Pick Six Previews has Florida State at 11. So you're right on the verge of a top 10 offense. And honestly, a top 10 offense doesn't mean anything if you don't play defense that well, because UCF is currently the number five offense. And welcome to Power Five football. It's not been a fun venture for them. So
thanks, Gus.
Exactly. But, you know, when you talk about their scoring 30 points a game, and, you know, I do feel like one of the big hot topics too is how, and we actually talked about this. I talked about this on an episode in the past, was where everyone's like, okay, well, we only have like two receivers that we throw it to, or three receivers that we throw it to. My point in the podcast that I did, in the article or the post that I had made about it, was I don't think it's that big of a deal. And what I did was I went back and I looked at 2013 FSU, one of the best offenses. And like, if you Google best passing offenses in college football, 2013 FSU is up there. 2019 LSU is up there. Mm-hmm. And they predominantly threw it to two or three guys, and they really didn't spread the targets around. In some cases, they were more concentrated than Florida State was this year. And even when I looked at Georgia 2021 versus 2022, they actually threw the ball around less in 2022 and had a much better passing offense. So, I mean, it's no offense to the other guys, but you don't bring in Keon Coleman to throw the ball to, you know, Darian Williamson. Like, you just don't. That's not why you brought him here. So feed the guys that you have, that you brought in to do this.
Right. Well, and I like those guys, Darian Williamson, you know, Destiny Hill, you know, I mean, Kentron was a star last season, but coming off the injury, Ja'Kai Douglas, those guys, they are the object of their role is to complement Johnny and Keon.
Right.
Like Johnny and Keon are the main targets almost on every single play. And then you feed those other, those slot receivers, those other receivers to get the defense thinking so that then you free up. Mike Norvell has said, again, you're going to hear me say this a lot, because if I've seen any coach who's been a man of his word from the first press conference, Mike Norvell has said since he's gotten here that his offense is built for playmakers, right? Now, not that those other guys aren't playmakers, but you have literally first round draft picks on the out. You have to design your offense around that. And then you use those other players as complements to that to get the defense thinking about what they're doing so that then you open them up. And so, yeah, like it's okay that they got two power receivers and then a bunch of good receivers.
Right. And I agree. And, you know, when you talk about guys, like you said, Destin Hill, you talk about, you know, Darian Williamson's a talented guy. Ja'Kai Douglas is a talented guy. They're going to get their opportunities.
Yeah.
But when the game's on the line, I mean, who do you trust? And
who do you trust?
And, again, like you talk about, you bring up 2019 LSU and then they have Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. Why do you want to throw it to anybody else? I don't get it. So, you know, it's not a big deal to me.
Well,
they concentrate these targets.
Yeah, sorry. What I was going to say is, you go to 2013 FSU. They had Kelvin Benjamin and Rashard Green, right? And then you had Kenny Shaw that was like your kind of like complement to those two. But when you look at that drive, to win the title, where did the ball go? The ball went to Rashard Green to get them there. And then, you know, he kind of threw it to the fullback, kind of hit Devontae Freeman on that little curling route. And then when it mattered most, where'd the ball go? Kelvin Benjamin, right?
Right. And you just have two guys that nobody can cover. And that's the thing. And that's what I talked about in the Duke preview article that I wrote was like, okay, so you talk about, or maybe it was the preseason notes that I was doing where you talk about, okay, well, you got most teams, when you talk about who they have to cover, they don't have a Johnny Wilson. Or they don't have a Keon Coleman. Florida State has both. So, like, you have an embarrassment of riches in two guys. So, why not feed them the ball? Because you're not going to have them forever. I mean, this is probably, you know, more than likely their last year they're going to go in the NFL. So, yeah, man, I think just when you talk about the offense as a whole, I think everything is fine there. Even if they're only throwing it to those two guys, you'll see the other guys get some work, you know, in these games coming up, like Wake Forest and things like that, where maybe you get into some garbage time. But I think the other thing, too, is going to be like your rushing offense. It started pretty slow. They had 135 yards against LSU, but then they kind of tailed off, only 22 against Clemson. Not great there. But the last 2 weeks, they've got over the 200-yard mark and close to the 200-yard mark.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do against a good Duke defense. But I think you're seeing some things come along. You're seeing a couple other backs get some work. I think a lot of the running game has to do with the offensive line that is – I'm not going to say that they've been bad. No. I just think they've been in a tough spot when you talk about not so much like everybody's out, but it's this week it's this guy. And then the next week it's that guy. And so you're not necessarily down a bunch of starters, but you can't get continuity between your five starters. And that makes a difference in a position where everybody has to gel and mesh together. So to me, if they can get the offensive line healthy, I think you're going to see the run game get a lot better going forward.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of that also too is each year your line can do certain things really well, depending on the pieces to the puzzle, and certain things it can't. Right. And so when Mike got to Florida State coming off of Memphis, I mean, he ran power, he ran, you know, split zone, he ran inside zone, you know, he ran gap, as a blocking scheme. And so then you know, bring in Alex Atkins, and now we develop Counter. And yep. last year, Counter was our bread and butter. I mean, we were running teams over with Counter. So we start out this year trying to run Counter, but we don't have, I would say, the type of guards, or at least we haven't found the type of guard just yet in our current pieces there that can help run that type of blocking scheme. So what did they do during the bye week? They self-scouted and they switched it up. They start running more gap, more zone. And yeah. now you're seeing the run game come to life again. Doesn't mean we've gotten away from Counter. It just means that we've found something that works. And then two, secondarily, is Mike is using the, like last year, he would use the run to set up the pass. He's actually inverted that now. And he's throwing more so that by the late third quarter, fourth quarter, we're jamming it down your throat in the run game.
Yeah, they're definitely not giving up on the run and just going full pass. I mean, even in the Clemson game where they could not run the ball, they still tried.
They're still trying.
And right. Like you said, I think it's just, it really, and I know I always talk about him on this show, but like when you talk about last year seeing Dylan Gibbons, the one game where he came off the field and his face mask was literally bent sideways from hitting somebody, like
he was a
dominant guard for you. Yes. Like he was really, really good. And so now, like we said, they're shuffling a lot of pieces, but I think the offense is going to be fine as they get healthy. Hopefully, you know, these guys can stay healthy and you can kind of get some continuity there before you get to your better teams on the schedule down the road. But I do feel good about the offense. I think you also got some young guys that are going to come on, like Hakeem Williams, man, just seeing his explosive raw ability in that game at the end against Syracuse. Oh, you know, maybe Syracuse had waved the white flag a little bit by then. But still, just seeing that, like if you can get him a couple of catches here, a couple of catches against Wake Forest, you know, maybe he plays the whole North Alabama game. You know, you could be a guy where by the time you play Florida or the ACC championship, that's a guy that not only could be a contributor this year, but next year when you look at that receiver room, I mean, now you got some dudes in there. And so that's exciting.
It'd be great to what would be perfect is you. First quarter, I mean, you get out to like a massive lead against North Alabama and you just rest your starters and let those young guys get in there and just play three quarters of like meaningful football, you know, instead of just late third quarter, fourth quarter game, like let them play meaningful football and see and start building that depth towards, you know, and it just also depends on like the red shirt, you know, they get four games, and they could still redshirt so they don't lose a year of eligibility. So it just depends on kind of what Mike and them are thinking around that. But yeah, I that would be awesome if we could do that.
Yeah, and I even said in the preseason schedule breakdown that if I were Mike Norvell, and of course I'm not, I don't make $8 million a year, but I wish I did.
Be nice.
exactly. You know, I really think when you look at that North Alabama game scheduled between two rivalry games, really, to me, you look at the Miami game, you hand Jordan his roses.
Yep.
You know, I understand North Alabama is senior day. It's going to be their final game in Doak. He doesn't touch the field if I'm the coach. Not in that game. I don't think you need him. I don't think there's any point in playing him or Keon or John. Me personally, I would use this kind of like the late season NFL game. I wouldn't even play him. I would not even let him touch the field unless you want to give him a drive or two because there's something you want to work on. But when you talk about a game that means essentially nothing that you could, you know, I mean, they could put me at quarterback, and I feel like I could maybe do a little something. Give me about 5 good minutes, and I'm going to be out of breath. But, I just feel like in that game, you don't need them. And between two rivalry games, there's no point in risking it. So
That's an interesting point.
That's my opinion. I would use it as a glorified bye week for your starters because I feel like, you know, if you can trust Tate Rodemaker to come in and get you a win against Louisville on the road last year, I think at home, you know, even if you're talking about him and Hakeem and Vandrevious and guys like that, I think that you could win that game without your starters.
I think you'd want to – I'm going to differ a little bit on you with that. I think you'd want to definitely establish the win first. So first quarter, maybe you don't give Jordan as many dropbacks or, you know, deep drops in the offense. Maybe it's a lot of runs, a lot of quick passes. See if you can get up a couple scores doing it that way. And then if you feel good by like the end of the first quarter, then I'd pull them real quick. Pull most of your guys.
I do agree with that. And I think he will play. I think that's a situation you're going to see because I think they will use it kind of as an in-game practice to work on some things before Florida. But I just think about it's just a sickening feeling. But you just think about losing Derwin James to Charleston Southern when the game was already over. And so, like, to me, it's just when you're literally you're the second to the last game to the promised land. Like, you're almost to the ACC championship if you're still in it. You're almost to the playoffs if you're still in the conversation. that's just, it's not a risk worth taking. But, you know, that's for the coaching staff to decide. But as we talk a little bit about the defense to close out the midseason vibe check part of this show, I'm feeling pretty good about this defense. And I know people were literally had to pitchforks out for Adam Fuller like day one after the LSU game. But you feel like that was, you know, obviously they're the number two offense opponent adjusted in college football. When you talk about Boston College, that game, yeah, I mean, it did look ugly.
Yeah.
Considering they're the 58th best opponent adjusted offense again, and that's only in a Power Five. So you only got 69 teams there. So it wasn't great, but, you know, again, if everybody was sick and you had a mobile quarterback and things like that, that could present you a problem there. But yeah, man, I think overall the defense has really found something. They've been excellent at late game adjustments. So yep. I think Adam Fuller, I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. I think the defense is doing well.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I thought maybe I think after 21 is where I was like, okay, I'm going to give it one more year before I pull my pitchfork out. And I really liked the progression that I thought the defense made. Now, yes, you can look at the last six, you can look at the last, you know, couple of games and say, well, the defense got terrible at the end of the year, but you had pieces that were out, you know, Fabian Lovett was hurt. You had all these things, and yet they still found a way to win the games. Right. Coming into this year, I wasn't like fuming about the defense. I actually saw like actual improvement. You know, I was upset with the busted assignments. I just thought those are absolutely, we should not have a running back running a wide open wheel route on the first play of the game against LSU. Like, that's just frustrating, right?
Right, right.
But think about this. They're 18th in the nation in third down conversion percentage at 31. Like, I mean, they're only giving up 32% of third down conversions. They're 18th in the nation. They're tied for 16th in red zone scoring, right? They're only 71%, right? You're getting in that red zone. You're not getting touchdowns as often. They're 53rd in the nation and yards per play at 6.47. So, I mean, they're about where in the progress of 4 years, they're getting better, right? They're actually getting better. We're actually... I think I wrote in one of the articles there that there's been almost 9 quarters, and you can go back and look at the article if I'm missing the point, if I miss it, but misquote it. But there's like 9 quarters where they've only given up about 20 points. They've given up 20 points.
Yeah, that's they've given up one touchdown in the last 9 quarters. So, I mean, and if guys, you're scoring 30 points a game.
Exactly.
One touchdown does not equal more than 30 points. So
thank you.
Unless they change the rules or something like that, you're good. You're good to go.
Thank you.
Exactly. And then you're 23rd in top defenses in Power Five opponent adjusted. So again, you're doing pretty good there on defense. Right. Could they be better? Of course, everybody could be better. And I'm not here to tell you that Adam Fuller is Kirby Smart 2.0 or like an elite defensive coordinator, but I think they've done a pretty good job. I think a lot of the stuff that you're seeing that are mistakes from this defense is a lot of blown assignments. And, and while that is on the coaches to get cleaned up, I mean, they can't play the game and coach the game too. There's only so much that they can do.
Correct.
But I think overall that the defense, especially when you talk about, you got Duke's offense who isn't lights out. When you talk about Riley Leonard might be injured coming up this Saturday, Wake Forest is not what they used to be. You know,
Snuggie
there's
some, Hill, buddy. Snuggie Hill.
Like, man, I'm really hoping for like a 50-point payback, like a just ACC revenge tour.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of games that you'll be able to get that momentum, get that success. And they are rotating a lot of guys. That's the thing about defense is you have built really good depth on your defense to where not only you're going to keep guys fresh throughout the season, but if you were, knock on wood, to lose somebody, you feel good about the guys that you've been bringing in because you've been getting them playing time.
Right. Absolutely. And then at the same time, you're also, I mean, I think the coaching staff did a study in like the last like 7 or 8 national champions, which was LSU, Bama and Georgia. And Clemson was in there too, but they were rotating a lot of players in because those dynamic star players were needing to be fresh when the games mattered the most, right?
Yep.
And so, when you look at the snap counts of Lovett and Farmer and Verse and all those guys, you're like, man, they're not playing as much. And so we're not as dominant as we can be. But yet, when we get to the end of the season, if we're in the games that we're hoping to be in, you're going to see why that mattered, why those snap counts were so low early in the season, because now they're as fresh as they need to be able to be as dominant as they need to be to help us win the game. And I'll say this, Jesse, you know, it's the old saying of, you know, that defense can travel, you know, that's what Florida State has. We have a defense that we feel comfortable putting in our bags, going on the road, knowing it's going to give us a chance to win.
Right. And I think that you, when you look at the defense, like you might get aggravated because you see, say, Byron Turner and Malcolm Ray or something like that in on a third and long in the first quarter. But if it's the fourth quarter, 2 minute drive or whatever, you're going to have the ones on the field. That's not an issue. They're just keeping them fresh for that situation, like you said. And and like you said, it has traveled. I think the defense has done well outside of really just the Boston College game. That's pretty much about the only bad one there. But when you combine this defense, who has been playing better, with an offense that has scored 30 plus points a game, again, all you got to do is win. Like, it doesn't have, not every week has to be 50 to nothing, because not everybody wins 50 to nothing anymore. Yes. The talent, and when you figure in, like we talked about last episode, with the transfer portal and spreading talent around more, when you talk about the new clock rules and you're getting two less drives per game on average, the games are going to naturally be closer. Right. Of course, you're going to have blowouts, but you're seeing things get a little bit closer, not only for Florida State, but across college football.
Right. And here's the other thing to consider to this, okay, that I think sometimes we Florida State fans are missing out on. The coaching staff, they have a big picture mindset. Of course, they want to win every game they coach. The players want to win every game they play. We want them to win every game we watch, right? A win's a win's a win, right? But the big picture thing is, and this was actually a recruiting thing that schools were kind of trying to use against Florida State. I remember hearing about this, was that Florida State will recruit you and then stick you behind transfers. That's what they'll do, right? And Mike and co literally are showing the nation, especially kids down in South Florida. If you're watching this down in South Florida, okay, you're going to go to Florida State and you see the likes of freshman Akeem, you see Julian Armello, you see all these guys, Byron Turner, these guys who were told that they were going to play, they weren't going to play a lick because they got transfers in, they're being recruited over. They're literally playing not just in garbage time, but in key moments.
Yep.
Florida State is a place built for playmakers. So if you think you're a playmaker, don't worry about who's in front of you. Obviously, they're showing you they will play you.
Right. And I think that's important. And honestly, even as bad as things went during that time, I think one of the favorite things that I saw out of the Willie Taggart era is he would tell people, like, look, it's your job to win the starting role, and it's my job to find someone to take your job who's better than you. So, like, I mean, I hate it if you don't get to play, but the people who negatively recruit that are like, okay, would you rather play a freshman who's undeveloped or let him sit behind Keon Coleman for a year?
Right.
Go out and have a guy who can be a 1,000-yard type Blitkenhoff receiver.
Right.
And then you develop that guy. You're not playing them before they're ready. So, I think it's kind of silly that some of the narratives that they talk, because I think everybody just wants to be on the field right now.
Right.
I don't think they want to develop where – you know, back in the day, you saw guys, it would be 2 or 3 years before they made it on the field. Yeah. But once you got there, you didn't make the freshman mistakes. You were ready to go. So keeping it moving, the next thing I do want to touch on, because like it's been so good this year outside of one play, I think we at least have to touch on it real fast. And that's special teams, man. Special teams has been lights out. Now, I'm gonna tread a very, very thin line here, because I'm superstitious. I will change my shirt 13 times in a game if that is what is necessary. But it's been good this year. I don't want to jinx anything, but it's been nice to see Fitzgerald have a bounce back year.
Yep.
Master Mono is an absolute weapon he does get the opportunity to punt. And like we said, outside of the one kickoff return against Virginia Tech, which really doesn't happen very often, man, this special teams has been something where when you're trying to win a lot, when you're trying to win an ACC championship, when you're trying to make the playoffs, you really just can't have your special teams be a hindrance, but it certainly doesn't hurt if it helps you. And I think this year it is an asset to this team.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, again, I'm not as superstitious, but I'm a little stitious like you.
And just for kickers. Kickers make me nervous.
I gotcha. I'm with you. I mean, you know, Fitzgerald, like, I mean, there was a time and place where we wanted to, you know, pay for his ticket out of here.
Yep.
And so, to see the comeback tour, the revenge tour of good old Fitz, like, I'm not going to say anything against it or for it. He's doing a great job this year. Keep doing what you're doing, man. And, you know, we're with you. That's what I'll say to that one. Alex Mastromano, I mean, that dude is, gosh darn it, he's a weapon. I mean, you know, I think I wrote in the midseason review, he's got, you know, he's averaging 58 yards in his punt. He's had 10 punts travel 50 plus yards and 10 punts that have been pinned inside the 20 yard line. Literally, he is a defense unto himself. Like,
yep.
Greatness. Now, here's what I would say gives me angst about special teams. Now, we know based on practice reports that special teams is literally, if not the number one worked on unit in those practices. And so it's a little frustrating that we still see punts that are being allowed to roll for additional yardage or being fair caught at the 10-yard line or less. Yeah. Like, what are we doing, guys? So that's a little frustrating. You know, I can't remember the last time we had a punt return or kick return for Trey Benson ran it back against Boston College. So that was a kick return. But yeah, like, I mean, Keon almost broke that off a couple times. Of course, the 72-yarder. There against Syracuse. I think outside, like, for the most part, you know, I would say like the vibe on the special team is good. If we could just get the
a little more electricity, you know,
a
what
little
I mean?
More like, electricity. Yeah.
I think it's one of them where it's like, it's not, you're not playing beamer ball. Like, it's, you're not beating people with special teams, but you're not losing the game with special teams either, which is really about all you can ask for. But at the same time, like, Mike Norvell has had good special teams throughout his history. I think his last year at Memphis, they were like number two in special teams rankings.
Yeah.
So I do think it is something that is going to be important when you talk about an ACC championship or a playoff, or like if you're playing North Carolina in the ACC championship and you have a really good offense, you might need to flip that field. And that might be the deciding factor in that game is field position. So with that being said, we will – so, like, we feel pretty good overall, just kind of put a bow on this part. Like, I feel pretty good. As far as coaching goes, we kind of got into that with offense and defense. I think everything's fine. You've seen some things with play calling that's a little questionable, but I think it's things that they're going to get cleaned up.
Yeah, and Mike has owned it, which was great. Like, whenever he's made a blunder on the play calls, he said, that's on me. That I got to be better about that.
Right, and so I think that's a great point to bring up because I think it is – you know, the coaches – they're not perfect. They have to get better themselves. And that's only something that comes with experience. And, you know, they're, I know they've been here 4 years now, but it's going on 4 years, but it's, you know, you're still learning at the Power Five level. He's still a young coach and they're going to get better. I'm not worried about the coaching in this one. But that leads us into the next section. So we don't run you guys too long here. We're going to talk about a little bit of how Florida State, how we feel. We know we feel good about where they're at. We feel like they're getting better week over week. We feel like they're on a trajectory to make the ACC championship. So we're going to talk a little bit about the ACC picture and then lead into the national picture before we get out of here. Cause I saw something interesting this morning. And I think one of the best things, now you could still have some parity in the ACC, but I think one of the best things, and you know, we know the ACC doesn't make many good decisions. But one of the best decisions that they've made is doing away with divisions. And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't like, I may be out on an island by myself here. I don't hate the ACC. I really don't. If they could
you're
get the revenue
on an island.
Yeah. Like if they could pay what the SEC paid, like, I do think you have some fun matchups in the ACC. Now that they did away with divisions, you get to play Virginia Tech more often. If they could, I think really the problem with the ACC is like, but outside of the revenue gap, when you talk about the conference as a whole, if they could just get some of these teams back, like Virginia Tech was not expected to be this bad when they added them. Miami has been a dud since they added them. If these teams were better, then the product would be better and you would feel good about the conference as a whole. But when you look at the picture, something that I saw that was brought up on the Late Kick show, most of you are familiar with, was that Virginia Tech, they're 3-4, but they only have one ACC loss, and that's to FSU. So when you look at their remaining schedule, Louisville was really kind of the biggest blockade there to them making an ACC championship as a 3-4 team right now. Yeah. They're still in it. And you talk about Florida State, obviously, is still in it. UNC is still in it. Duke is still in it. Louisville's still in it. There's so even Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech are still in it. Like, there's some crazy situations. And, you know, we were talking pre-show about this. There's a lot of football left. Things are going to start to sort themselves out because Duke and UNC play, Virginia Tech and Louisville play, you know, Clemson and Miami, like they could essentially one of them could eliminate the other one once you get the three ACC losses. So there's some interesting games left to play, but the picture is a lot more crowded than maybe you thought it was. And I think that's a little bit fun. So we're going to see how things go. You know, Florida State hands Duke a loss this week.
Yeah.
And then they hand NC State or UNC a loss when they play. I mean, again, you got to win the games in front of you, but it's an interesting picture.
No, it absolutely is. And you know, here's the thing I'll say about the ACC to bring your point home is, it's not it's a Power Five conference. The problem I've had most with the ACC is really two problems. One, the bell cow of your conference, Florida State and Clemson, you do a terrible job of making sure they eat first, right? You know, the old saying, right? Florida State and Clemson, let's put it that way, should eat first. Now, Clemson has been the bell cow for the last, you know, several years here, but Florida State really was the thing that made it eat anything.
And they built the ACC.
They built the ACC, and yet you treat Florida State and Clemson like they're like your second stepchild. It's ridiculous. Right. And you support the North Carolina schools, North Carolina, Duke, Wake. You make them like they're the bell cow. They're not even bringing eyes to your conference.
Yep.
So that's one. And then two, officiating across the nation has just been bad, but I swear the ACC tops it. You know, another crappy call. Like and they refuse. I think every week, Jesse, every week I tag the ACC in something of like, how can you keep allowing this to happen? It's just, it's absolutely atrocious. But
if there's one thing we lead in, it's terrible officiating. We have that on lock. We are the number one Power Five conference on lock for terrible officiating. I do think when you talk about the ACC, I will just say real quick, like, I think that if the teams could get better and they could get back to where they belong, like Blacksburg is a fun atmosphere. Clemson is a fun atmosphere. Yep. NC State at times, even though I don't like that school and their fan base, you know, from some of the things you've heard in the past, that can be a fun thing. Miami, all three of their fans, you know, when they do show up, there's nothing much going on there, but you get to travel to some cool cities when you talk about Raleigh and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, the SEC, you're going to have some big game day atmospheres, but you know, who wants to go to Starkville? Who wants to go, you know, places like that? That's not
exactly, go to Missouri.
That's not a big destination, but you know, as a whole, I think the ACC is just, I still think Florida State needs to get out. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Because like you said, they treat us like the redheaded stepchild, as the saying goes, or whatnot. And so I think if they lose Florida State and Clemson, they're in big trouble.
Right. Absolutely. But at the end of the day, the storylines are still so prevalent right now. Like, and you really got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and maybe Clemson. So maybe 7, you still have almost 7 teams at play for a berth in the championship game. And depending on how the season, like you said, you got to play the games in front of you, depending on how all that breaks out. I mean, we could be in like tiebreaker season. And I don't know if you folks have read the ACC tiebreaker stuff. It's wild.
Yeah. Like we've joked before, I think it's going to end up, someone's going to be like sitting in the back of a diner in Charlotte somewhere flipping quarters to see who gets to make it. Cause it's crazy. Like you were reading it to me before the show and I was like,
just in a little bit, you know, somebody, you know, like you said, two people in that Waffle House in Charlotte trying to figure this out. You got, you know, obviously the way it will go is that if there's two teams that basically tie for second place, so the second person to get in, then it's going to break down by the head-to-head. So if they've played each other, okay, that's the first tiebreaker. If there's no head-to-head, then the next determinant is the win percentage among common opponents. So let's say it's Duke and North Carolina. They or maybe better, Duke and Virginia Tech. They didn't play head to head. So now you're looking at, okay, well, let's look at their common opponent that's ranked the highest and what were their results, right? So you would say, well, Duke played Florida State, Virginia Tech played Florida State, they both lost, right? So now you move to the next opponent. So if that doesn't work, then it moves to the highest seeded common opponent and you move down the standing. If that doesn't work, then the fourth step is the combined winning percentage. So you take Virginia Tech's opponents, you take Duke's opponents, you add it all up. Whoever has the best winning percentage, that's the team that gets in. So, I mean, we're still in for wacky season, basically.
Right. This sounds like something only the ACC would come up with. But, I mean, this is also the conference that's known for the ACC Wheel of Destiny, where it's like, who's just going to give it away? But you talk about Georgia Tech. They still have to play. I was just looking at it. They play UNC and Clemson still. I mean, you know, pigs will probably fly before they beat both of those teams. I'm not seeing that happening. But you still, I mean, you talk about Louisville, Duke, UNC, even Virginia Tech, who's gotten better, Florida State.
Right.
It could be interesting at the end of the year. And so I think you kind of want UNC at the end of the year, because if you do get, and we'll let this lead us into the national picture, I think you kind of want UNC at the end of the year, because you want an undefeated UNC at that. You want the highest ranked team to kind of get you that strength of schedule. You know, that's why I think this Saturday against Duke is big, because now you're adding to that resume. And I think that will help.
Yes.
But it could be interesting because you could see a lot of different teams. You could see Duke again. You know, if you hand Duke a loss, and then that's their only ACC loss because we know Notre Dame doesn't count, then they go upset UNC and have the head-to-head, you might be playing Duke again. So it's I think that's the exciting thing about having no divisions is it's not like you're going to get log jammed where you have, say, Clemson and Florida State, who are by far the two best teams in the conference, and Florida State doesn't get to play because they're stuck behind Clemson.
Right.
And then you get some trash team from the Coastal, which is usually what happens.
Right.
Which is why you saw Florida State beat Duke 45-7 before, which is why you saw Clemson beat Miami 100-0 or whatever that score was. Like it was one time they made the All Canes Conference Championship, they got smoked by 50. So like
that's right.
Thanks for coming. So I think that's like I think it's interesting when you look at the whole picture, but we'll let that lead us as we get ready to close it out into the national picture here. I think it you're seeing some things kind of clear themselves up. And I think that it is interesting the next few weeks. I think there's some pretty big ones when you talk about what's going forward. And the one team that I'm interested to watch is Georgia. And we've talked about Georgia a lot on this show. You guys know I'm kind of tied to them through family and stuff like that. But so I loosely keep up with them. And when you talk about Georgia now, you're looking at a team who just lost Brock Bowers, and it looks like they're talking about for about 4 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look back at that Auburn game, that was the only reason they won that game was Brock Bowers. So now you're talking about you got a bye week, but you got to beat Florida in a neutral site game. I know you say it's Florida, but at the same time, you never know without your best offensive playmaker. Then you get Missouri at home. And then you got Ole Miss there, too. And now, luckily, they get all these games pretty much at home. But then if he's not back, you have to travel to Tennessee without your best offensive weapon. So things could get dicey there. And then when you talk about Georgia, if they were to, say, drop a game or so and then beat, who knows, like an Alabama in the SEC championship, there's a situation the SEC gets left out of the playoffs.
Oh, man. And wouldn't that be a thing of beauty?
They would cancel the season, I think.
They would just be like, no. We're going to reseed this.
Exactly. So, actually, we're going with good losses this year because we got to get them in.
Yes.
So I think it's interesting. And then, obviously, like we said, you got the Big Ten picture that still has to shape up. Can Michigan win straight up without stealing signals? They still got to play Ohio State, Penn State this weekend. That's a huge game.
Well, and I heard something this week of like, and I don't want to misquote it, but basically like Penn State has not won like a high level ranked game in a long time. Like it's been a while. And so I'm like, oh, and they go into the Shoe this weekend.
Yep.
Oh man, I don't know. And listen, you know, Florida State is second in the nation and you know, 30 points or plus scored game. You know, who's number one? Penn State.
Really?
Penn State. But you look at it, if you look at like Penn State's schedule, they've not really played anyone of substance right now. I mean, their schedule is West Virginia. Okay. Whatever. Delaware. Terrible. Illinois. Terrible. Terrible. Yep. Iowa. Terrible. Yep. Northwest and Massachusetts. UMass. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. We're going to find out about them coming up because you have Ohio State this weekend. Then they get Michigan at home. Now, the rest of their schedule is pretty much cake from there on out with Rutgers and Michigan State, who's awful right now, and Indiana. But there's still a situation for chaos there. I mean, what if they go end up, you know, what if they
beat Maryland Ohio upsets them? Yeah.
Right. Like, what if they beat Ohio State? I think when you talk about a team like Penn State, who I think has the potential to be in the playoffs, I think they're a good enough team to do that if they can prove that they can win against the better teams on their schedule, which we're going to find out on Saturday. But they may be one of those where maybe it's not the favorite to win, but they're a chaos agent. They come in and they upset an Ohio State, and then Ohio State turns around and upsets a Michigan or something like that.
Right.
And I think when you tie it back into Florida State, I think you do want as much chaos as possible at the top because if you were to drop a game, you can still be in that conversation. Yes. Now, if this was 2024, none of this would matter. We wouldn't even be having this conversation
because it'd be 12th. Right.
Exactly. As long as you don't lose more than one game, you're good. Right. But I still think, you know, there's a lot of football left to play and there's that potential for chaos at the top.
Well, and I think I've been thinking this all season. Now, I try not to get ahead of myself because I'm acting like I play. I'm focused on one game at a time.
Right.
But I've thought about this. Michigan and Ohio State are a natural eliminator of each other, right? Yep. Once one of them is going to be eliminated. And if it's a blowout, then it's a true elimination, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter who plays in the Big Ten championship because they're on the same they're on the same side. So one of them, they will get eliminated from the Big Ten and probably from the college football playoffs. Washington is on a collision course with USC. That's going to be a high scoring game. And so Florida State went out, and you're looking at probably, if you went out, a two seed, which gets you closer, gets you the ability to play closer to your home instead of having being shipped out to California.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's key because, you know, you talk about the seeding coming into it. And to me right now, like, there's still a lot to play. I think you're going to look at the Big Ten champion. I think you're going to look at the Pac-12 champion. I think you're going to have the ACC champion. And then, but someone's going to fight for that last spot. And you, because you got Oklahoma and you got the Big 12. That's kind of a problem right now. Like, I think you want Oklahoma to slip up and lose a game to at least eliminate that contender, because now that they beat Texas, that's kind of who you were looking at to take that spot. So I think really this is truly the one year, the first year since they've had the playoffs, that all five conferences have a playoff caliber team.
Yeah.
And in some cases, there's more. I mean, I know we talk about UNC, like they struggled against App State, and they did, but I mean, they're still undefeated. They're still a really team. Like, even if Florida State were to slip in that game or something, UNC could still make the playoffs. Yeah. I mean, there's there's so many teams that have the possibility to make it that I think it really –
yeah.
I mean, guys, this is what we wanted for a long time. This is what we asked for, was parity in the game. And now you're seeing, I think there's a legit six or eight teams that could compete for a national title this year.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, when you talk about that Oklahoma team, they, you look at their schedule, they really have no other challenge. They got UCF, which you're going to blow out. They got they're at Kansas. They got, they're at Oklahoma State. You know, sometimes Oklahoma State might give them a good game. They have Virginia at home. They're at BYU. Go Mormon City. Then they have TCU at home. So maybe they might meet Texas again in the Big 12 championship game. That might be their next challenge, right? Yeah. And so you worry, like, okay, Oklahoma's still in there, Texas is still in there, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State. There's going to be some elimination there. North Carolina is interesting because they got Duke still to come up. And they got Clemson at Clemson after that. So you're like, you're almost like, I don't know, you know, I don't know if North Carolina is real. We're really going to see if they're real in that 2 week span, because they got Virginia coming up. They should win that. They should beat Georgia Tech. They're definitely going to blow out Campbell. So you kind of look at that. And so you think on this picture, again, this natural picture that you, like you said, you have five conferences with five legitimate teams, but we only got four spots, right? And this is pruning season. We are now officially in the pruning of college football season.
Yep.
Teams are going to start falling off, and you just hope that Florida State is not one of them.
Exactly. And like what you talk about UNC, now that they got Tez Walker back, like, I see why they want him back.
That's right.
That dude is legit. Like, can we do something about Daryl Jackson, please? But
please, Jesus.
I mean, he looks legit, but I do think, like you said, you bring up an interesting point where it's like, you just, there's a lot of teams that can still bolster their resume. When you talk about a North Carolina who might have a win against Clemson, who might have a win against Duke, who knows, may have a win against FSU in the ACC championship. But I do think that is also, as we get ready to close out here, I think that is why you want Florida State to start winning these games like we know they can. I know at the end of the day, people always say, and I'll be one to say it too, and I know you said it on the very first episode we did together, a win is a win is a win.
Yep.
And if you win every game by 1 point, you're still undefeated. And
correct.
I don't see an undefeated Florida State who beat Clemson in Death Valley, who beat, you know, and maybe you want Clemson to beat UNC in that, because that makes your strength of schedule look better, because you don't play UNC, and beat LSU the way they did. I think you're still fine, but you want some of them style points, because like we talked about with the ACC championship, like if it does come down to flipping a quarter behind a Waffle House in Charlotte somewhere, like who's to say that the playoffs don't become almost the same thing? Like you may have a situation where you're having to go, okay, let's go down the resume. Let's see, did they have six games like Boston College, or did they, was that a fluke and they blew everybody else out? That's going to come into the picture if things shake out a certain way, and you can't always count on chaos, but it would be helpful.
And I'll say this at the end here is, like, you know, in some ways, as much as like Drake May scares me a little bit, you almost want them to beat Clemson, right?
Yeah.
Because then if they win out and they come into that ACC game, that's just another another marker on your, if you're able to win that, another beauty mark, so that when the committee's looking at where to seed you, they're like, well, I mean, gosh, look at Florida State's right. They got four of the best wins of any team in the nation this season.
Right. And I think the good point that you bring up too is when you talk about years ago, I mean, we saw the Big 12 change their format because of this. You saw, correct. I believe it was Baylor that got left out because they didn't have that exclamation point at the end of their season.
Correct.
And if you get a top 10 UNC team, I mean, that's like putting a gold star on the end of the calendar. And I know people talk about, like, could you still make it if they sustained a loss like against Florida in the Swamp or something like that? I mean, you're obviously going to make the ACC championship, but that's hard, man, because we know that when you lose has a lot to do with it. Like, if they had lost the LSU game and say you played Florida first, like it wasn't a ranked team because obviously it doesn't look as bad.
Right.
But like, if you lost the first game of the season, to me, that's a lot more forgivable than the last game of the season. So I think Florida State does need to win out, but I think it is important because obviously I think they could make the ACC championship as a one loss team, but the national picture might get a little dicey if the chaos that you need to happen doesn't. But like you said, if you get a top 10 UNC team in that ACC championship game and you go in there and you get that win, that's going to look really, really good because you can't guarantee that the you know, what if someone's playing Iowa in the Big Ten championship and they've lost a few games, though they don't have a ranked game. So that will be big. And I will say this is also why, now I know they would have been in the Coastal back in the day too, we're talking about UNC, but this is the fun of why eliminating divisions is good for the ACC because it was something I talked about when they made the difference. The change was it's a double-edged sword. At the one point, you're risking your best team having to play another challenging game so you could knock yourself out of the playoffs. But this could also be the one game that leapfrogs you into the playoffs. So I think it's a risk-reward situation that's good for the conference.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, I mean, you think about like, you know, if they could stay, I remember, I think it's 2021 where Michigan and Ohio State played and, you know, Michigan had already had a loss, right? But then they beat Ohio State to then that propelled them into the college football playoff. And so you're right. Like when you lose, when you win, as I think the first rankings come out either after this weekend or the next weekend, I can't remember,
I think it's next weekend, the 31st.
Okay, so next one. Okay, so yeah, so now it really matters.
Yep.
Now it really matters. So getting better, now's the time, right? We're literally in the almost midway to end point of October. Now we need to start seeing this offense start those things, Jordan overthrowing balls, you know, hitting the receivers in stride, defenses being in assignments, making sure we're getting off the field on third down, right? Doing the small things now matter because now we're being judged against the best teams in the country now.
Right. And I think it's you. And that's a great point because I think now when you get 6 to 7 weeks into the season, your mistakes become your identity. It's correct. Not so much that, oh, well, they'll get better. It's early in the season. Now you're like, maybe this is just who they are. Maybe. Right. And that's not just Florida State. That's every other team. Maybe it's this is just who they are. Maybe they don't play great here or there or on this aspect of the game. So, yeah, I think it's important to be peaking at the right time. I think it's important to start getting some of those dominating wins because all that will be considered coming up in the college football playoff rankings. But I do like that they look at your resume as a whole. It's not like this ridiculous AP poll where we're judging you based on, you know, this whole conversation we had about Georgia getting credit for something that happened 2 years ago or whatever that has nothing to do with 2023. So that is exciting. Those are the only ones that matter. And I'll be on the lookout for that because, you're the week before they come out. I know they come out next week after you play Wake Forest, but you're going to get a chance right now this Saturday, depending on when you watch this, to prove it against a top 20 Duke team. So, Michael, before we get out of here, my man, are there just any final things you want to talk about? Anything you want to say? Like I said, I'm really excited to kind of – I love doing these mid-season things to kind of see where you're at, how you feel about things. I think it was – we had high expectations coming into this season. And I think they're on par with those. It doesn't always have to look great, but as long as they win, who cares? And that makes me as a fan happy. You're so far, you've won every game at home. Hopefully that continues this Saturday night. So it's a fun fan experience. More than anything, I think that you can go into any Saturday and you can, or Sunday or Friday or whenever we play. I think you can go in knowing that Florida State, you're not like, oh man, please just don't get blown out. Like you feel like you can line, like if they played Georgia Saturday, I feel like they could hang with them. And so that's the fun part about Florida State football this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with you that if they scheduled a game this Saturday against Georgia, I'd still be nervous, but I'd have the confidence that we could have a game with them. That it'd be a game. Yep. I'm not saying we'd win. I'm just saying it'd be a game. I'm overall pleased with this team so far. You know, I always try to tamper my expectations based on the rest of the fan space expectations, so that, you know, if they let me down, I'm not as mad. But I've been overly thrilled. I've been blown away. Yes, I've been nitpicky as well too, but it's like a good nitpicky. It's like, oh, because I know you can be better. Come on, right?
Yeah.
But I'm excited. Again, I think, you know, if we keep doing what we do, we focus on the climb. You know, Mike Norvell says all the time, it's not about the team that we're playing across. It's about us. That's what we got to focus on. They keep doing that. I mean, you know, the sky's the limit, as they say.
Definitely. I think there's no goal that's not within reach for this team this year. If they keep getting better week over week, and recruiting is going to be something that's going to play into that as well. Yep. I mean, you already got one of Miami's best commits coming. Yep. You're hosting Clemson on Saturday, and a couple of your best commitments are going to be in Doak Campbell Stadium to watch Florida State instead. So, you know, we could use – you get that class going, Tribe 24. If you get that, you land a top five class or something like that, then you can start to see where the success gets sustained year over year. And, man, it's just a great time to be a Florida State Seminole, and I'm just really excited about the future with all the renovations and things coming. They're going to up their facilities, and they're just doing a lot, and it's really exciting. So it's a great time. But, Michael, I've had a great time just kind of
doing
this freelance show. Like I said, hopefully we can do this more often where it's just whatever comes to mind, we just talk about it. Because there, obviously we keep it tied to Florida State, but there's a lot to talk about in the college football world. And it's fun to kind of set the stage from Florida State's perspective into the national conference picture. So it's been fun. Guys, we appreciate everybody tuning in. As we always say, if you support our sponsors who support us, it is greatly appreciated. Alumni Hall FSU has all the game day gear that you guys need. Get 10% off your order online or in-store using code SPEAR, 1817 Thomasville Road. If you guys like to put a little bit extra on the game, Prize Picks is also someone who helps support us. You get a 100% deposit match up to $100 on your first deposit. I got a few numbers I'm looking at for this weekend, so we'll be back with our Prize Picks player of the game in the next episode as well. So, guys, I appreciate everybody tuning in. Stay connected to Plant the Spear. Check out the website. Check out social media. Get in on the conversation. We're always active over there. And, guys, thanks for tuning in, and that's going to do it here. So, Michael, I appreciate you joining me, my man.
Yes, sir. Go Noles.
Go Noles.